Our episodes contain graphic information and at times strong language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Would you like some murder with your coffee?
Welcome to Morning Murders! I'm Nicole.
I'm Amanda.
And I'm Brenna. We're just three guys that like to sit around, drink coffee, and talk about true crime.
Oh, yes. That old true crime.
The truest crime that there was ever told.
Ever told.
And we are elbow deep in season three.
We're elbows.
Elbows deep in it.
We put our elbows in it.
We're in it. We're all the way in.
We're here?
Yes, we're here.
We are here.
We're queer. And so are you, beer?
Beer?
Beer eats.
Sorry.
That didn't rhyme, so.
So you guys, whether you're beans or beers, you're here.
You're here.
Great.
Well, oh, gosh. Welcome to season three. We're starting it off with a bang.
I first want to apologize for my reporting on Junko Furuta from last season, and thank you for your patience when it comes to covering true crime that takes place in other countries. Several times, I incorrectly called her Futura when her correct family name is Furuta. I promise to do better in the future and to take extra care because the victims' names are important. They matter. They just do. And that is what inspired the case I brought to the Breakfast Nook today. Have you heard of Satoshi Uematsu?
Actually, I haven't. I don't know. I don't know this case at all. I don't think. We'll see as you go. But I don't think so.
Well, it was 2:10 in the morning on July 26, 2016 at Tsukui Lily Garden, a residential care center for folks with severe mental and physical disabilities run by a social welfare organization in Sagamihara, Japan, when the silence of the night was interrupted by broken glass. 26-year-old former employee Satoshi Uematsu was fast at work tying up staff members and taking their keys. He had a mission to carry out. A few months prior, in February, he hand-delivered a letter to the home of Tadamori Oshima, the Speaker of the House of Representatives of Japan. He asked for Oshima's assistance in delivering his message to Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. In it, he wrote, "I envision a world where a person with multiple disabilities can be euthanized, with an agreement from guardians, when it is difficult for the person to carry out household and social activities." He also wrote that the killings of disabled would be for the sake of Japan and world peace, as well as to benefit the global economy and prevent World War III.
Oh my God.
What?
The letter continued on with an offer to target two specific facilities housing disabled people. In the first half of the message, Uematsu said he could kill 460 people. But in the second half, the number he gave was 260. He added that staff would not be harmed, but they would be tied up to keep them from interfering, and that afterwards, he would turn himself in. At the end, he signed his name, with his address, telephone number, and the name of his employer of 3 years, Tsukui Lily Garden. Later that month, yes, it took a couple of weeks, after his letter was brought to the attention of Sagamihara authorities, he was arrested, detained, questioned, and then involuntarily committed to a psychiatric hospital for 2 weeks. Unfortunately, he was released on March 2nd after it was deemed that he was not a threat.
Oh my God, he's clearly a threat.
It was now 2:30 in the morning on the 26th of July, and police were called to the care center by staff members, reporting that a man with a knife had broken into the building. Armed police entered at around 3 a.m., where they discovered the crime scene. 19 people had been stabbed to death in their beds, while 26 others were injured. 29 ambulances were sent to the facility. Uematsu was nowhere to be found. Security footage caught him slipping out of the building at 2:50 a.m. The manhunt would be over before it even began, because 2 hours later, he turned himself in at Tsukui Police Station with a bag containing bloodied kitchen knives and other various sharp tools. On February 24th, 2019, after being deemed mentally fit to stand trial, Uematsu was charged with 19 counts of murder, 24 counts of attempted murder, 2 counts of illegal confinement causing injury, 3 counts of illegal confinement, 1 count of unlawful entry, and 1 count of violating the firearm and sword possession control law. Uematsu's defense team said that they planned to argue that he was mentally incompetent at the time of the crime due to the effects of marijuana.
Oh, my God.
Literally.
Sorry, bro.
Yeah.
What? It don't work that way.
Literally marijuana.
Wait, but what year is it?
This was 2019.
Oh, my God.
They found traces of, well, the crime was in 2016. So this is, like, by the time he actually came around to, like, sentencing and stuff, he had been, like, in prison for that for however long.
Right.
So they found traces of marijuana in his bloodstream at the time of the murder, so they decided that it had to have been the marijuana, not the deep-seated, unchecked ableism.
Oh, yeah.
No,
oh, clearly.
Yeah.
Right.
No doubt.
On December 23rd, 2019, Uematsu said that denying the charges against him will make the trial too complex, until a couple weeks later on January 8th, 2020, when Uematsu pleaded not guilty to the stabbings. He also tried biting off his own right pinky finger during court, saying, "I thought it was the grittiest way to offer my apology." On February 17th, the prosecution announced that the death penalty was officially sought against Uematsu, saying that the rampage was inhumane and left no room for leniency. On March 16th, 2020, Uematsu was sentenced to death by the Yokohama District Court, saying, "I kind of expected the death penalty, but I'm not convinced I deserve it." Adding, he feels heavy-hearted when he thinks how difficult it will be for him to receive visitors once his death sentence has been finalized. Uematsu expressed no regrets about making discriminatory remarks about people with severe disabilities at court hearings. "I don't think I'm saying something wrong. Those severely disabled people have no right to complain even if they were killed," he said. In the trial, he said disabled people who cannot communicate their thoughts create unhappiness in society. Asked about how he felt when bereaved families spoke during hearings, Uematsu said, "I thought they became hysterical. They didn't touch my heart." After the ruling was delivered, Uematsu raised his hand and asked for permission to speak, but the judge rejected the request because fuck that guy. He later explained to Kyoto News that he tried to explain in court that it would be positive for Japan if marijuana use was accepted. So this is why we can't have nice things. Uematsu killed 10 women and 9 men aged between 18 and 70 and injured 26 more, 13 severely. But who were they? To this day, there are even only 7 names on the memorial erected at the grounds of the care center. Almost nothing is known of the victims because the families didn't want the public scrutiny of having a disabled family member.
Okay, that's not how I thought the sentence was going to end. I thought the sentence was going to end that they didn't want, like, it to be public. Yeah. You know, just they wanted to just grieve and by themselves. Nope, quite opposite.
Victims' families likely also worried about being accused of abandoning their relatives by institutionalizing them, experts and activists said. I hate to be this guy, but a eugenics protection law passed in 1948 to prevent birth of inferior descendants from the eugenic point of view, permitting sterilization of people with a range of disabilities, was not repealed in Japan until 1996.
1996.
This last sterilization that they talk about, that they have record of, was carried out in 1993. And it was only 2 years ago that an agreement was reached to pay restitution to some of the 25,000 sterilization victims, many of whom are still fighting in court for additional compensation. Katsunori Fuji, head of the Japan Council on Disability, believes that although the eugenics law is no longer in the books, its repercussions are still impacting society and attitudes to the disabled. He points to the fact that the government is relying on the statute of limitations having expired on the sterilizations to avoid paying damages to victims, despite the procedures being ruled unconstitutional by the courts. At the beginning of August in 2020, a court in Kobe became the 6th to acknowledge the unconstitutionality of the law, but denied damages to plaintiffs. 5 sterilized victims, 1 with cerebral palsy, and 2 couples with hearing impairments, had sought 55 million yen, which is like $428,000, from the government. One of the plaintiffs, Yumi Suzuki, was forcibly sterilized without explanation in 1968 at the age of 12.
Oh my, 12?
Yeah. And mind you, when I say, like, disabilities, I'm literally talking about, like, whether, like, there's autistic spectrum, like, mental disability, there's physical ones. You could just be in a wheelchair. You could literally just be deaf. You could be blind.
And they're sterilizing these people.
They were, yeah. The stigma is so serious that only recently families of the Sagamihara stabbing victims have made public statements to the press. Even then, most are only using first names to protect the family's identities. Mm. Like Miho. Miho was a resident at Tsukui Lily Garden. For years, Miho was only a letter or a symbol listed in court hearings, but in January of 2020, her family released her first name. She was 19 years old. I was proud of her as she had a lovely smile and was so adorable, her mother said in a letter to the press. Her mother also would not give her name. Mm. Miho is living her life to the fullest, and I would like to leave proof for that. I want the name Miho to be remembered, she wrote. I hope that this country becomes one in which people with disabilities and their families can live calm lives without worry. A society in which people with disabilities can live at ease is truly a society in which people without disabilities can live happily. Even though that's not... I didn't entirely agree with that quote of hers, but I understand what she's trying to get at. I just think it shouldn't be about... Like, I feel like it just should be about them being happy. It shouldn't have to be like, people without disabilities would be so much happier if people with disabilities were okay. Yeah. Like,
they'll all just leave each other alone, and who cares? They're all just people or people.
I'll just be people.
Right. So I just, like, I... Not that I disagree. There's just a better way to word that. I know she's coming from a society that already doesn't value people with disabilities anyways, which is really frustrating. Mm-hmm. A 48-year-old former worker at the care home recalled that some of the victims had not been able to speak and used to express their feelings with gestures. The deceased people taught me many things. I want to convey to the public that everyone's life has meaning. So with Uematsu waiting his execution and the victims' families mourning their loss in private, that's where we are left. Any final sips?
I want to give a shout out to Magnum Coffee.
Magnum Coffee.
They're a coffeery in here, a coffeetery.
Coffeetery.
A coffeetery in Vegas. And I think it's at least where they roast their beans. But they're a company in town and they're really cool and they're really nice and they have delicious coffee. They're kind of over by the airport if you're a Vegas person.
Like sunset and... Not quite Eastern.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's really cool. They do coffee stuff there. They also donated a gourmet coffee basket for the Playhouse. So thank you, Magnum Coffee. Also, you have delicious coffee.
Thank you
for being...
For being...
Delicious coffee.
Oh, coffee.
Not a sponsor. Love that.
Development Hell is back, guys.
Development Hell is the podcast that Richard Humphreys and Kyle Anderson has with another gentleman that's, I'm sure, very lovely as well. I'm very sorry that I don't know your name. But I love that podcast. They do, like, a stupid, awesome deep dive about, like, a movie that took forever to get made. They just did the Speed Racer, like, and it's so good. And they just, like, they're funny. Their anchor ad is my favorite one. And because they tell the truth about how we make millions of dollars off of Anchor. Mm-hmm. they're not afraid to tell the truth. And they're just funny boys, and I love it. And I'm somebody that likes to learn a ton of shit about stupid things. They did a whole thing about Godzilla, and it's so great. And King Kong, like, it's so great. So I highly recommend it if you want to learn about movies and projects and video games and stuff like that that just took forever.
Yeah.
Fun.
Nice.
Awesome.
That's really awesome.
How much did they pay you for that ad?
Not enough.
No, just kidding.
They paid me nothing. They paid me in friendship because I love them.
Ah.
Friendship.
Gross. I love it.
Friendship.
I mean, and this is just the obvious, like, takeaway from this. Oh my God, I can't even look at Nicole. She's like tearing up. People with disabilities are people. They are human beings who deserve everything that everyone deserves. Like, I don't know. That was such a good case, and I'm really glad that you brought it to our attention because it's really important, and it's because it's having this visceral effect on me and Nicole right now. Yeah, that's just the overall statement. It's just like, I'm sorry, what the fuck? These people are people, and they deserve everything. They deserve happiness, and this is crazy. It's crazy. You don't get to decide what makes a person valuable or not. Mm-hmm. Everybody is valuable.
Yep. No person is above anybody else. We are all equals on this planet. Mm-hmm. No one has more rights than another person. All of these people that were attacked and are lost, they had rights. They had dreams. They had futures. And it's really unfortunate that he literally wrote a letter saying what he was going to do. And it just nothing happened.
He got institutionalized for 2 weeks and that was it. So yeah, like
again,
nothing happened. Yeah. They acknowledged that it was wrong by institutionalizing him and arresting him and all these and questioning him and all that stuff. But I think that's what, remember, like, was it last season? I was like, what happens next?
Mm-hmm.
What do we do next? After we've done the report, they've been sent away, and then they have to come back into society at some point.
They don't, though. Like, truth be told, like, that there should be ways that, like, you, like, he shouldn't have come back after 2 weeks.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is, like, I agree, but, mm-hmm. like, where do you go?
That's something that hasn't been created.
Right.
And that's the problem, mm-hmm. right? Because a lot of societies focus too heavily on the other issues and don't really put too much stock in these mental illness cases or whatnot. And that just goes to show how important it is, like, to truly let, if you're trying to rehabilitate someone or, like, help them become a better human or, like, understand their functions, whatever it is, you can't, 2 weeks is nothing.
Especially when the society that you are working in is against it as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Because it's more like, okay, yep, we did a thing. Here's a Band-Aid. Bye. Okay,
because they don't care either.
No.
No. Because they show that by... Mm-hmm. sterilizing people for a couple decades. Like, so my final sip is, it's really easy to turn a blind eye to the existence of others if it makes us uncomfortable. That's why it's important to remember that everyone is worthy of attention, respect, and care. There is this guy named Chris Ulmer, a disability rights advocate who is the founder of the nonprofit called Special Books by Special Kids. He has a YouTube channel that works with normalizing the diversity of the human condition by sharing the stories of everyday people with neurodivergence. Mm-hmm. Something that comes up a lot when asked what each person would want others to know about them is that they are listening. They are paying attention. They are living, breathing people that live lives just like you and me. They love Star Wars and makeup and sports. They are happy to chat in public, at work, and school. You can ask questions. You can connect. I highly recommend checking out Special Books by Special Kids to learn more or to meet a potential new friend. They, on their website, have a whole thing where you can totally talk to people that use technology to talk. Like, they're nonverbal, but they use laptops and all that kind of stuff. Like, there's a full thing on there, the Special Books by Special Kids. I will make sure that I put the link in our sources so you can arm yourself with knowledge.
That's amazing. That's cool. A really amazing program. I had no idea that existed.
Yeah, it's cool. He has the YouTube channel. He also does, like, he's on social media, all that stuff as well, but he just goes to their house and he interviews them. And he was working in special education for a long time, so that's why he's got, like, experience. But it's cool. He just sits with people that have, you know, all sorts of other stuff going on and talks to them and asks them questions and hangs out. And always, he'll always ask, like, what is it you wish people knew about you? And they're always like, I'm right here.
Oh, wow.
Like, I'm right here.
Yeah.
Like, you, when you ignore me because you're afraid to talk to me because I'm in a wheelchair on the corner, like, because I'm trying to go somewhere else, like, or I'm at a casino or whatever else, like, I can see you. I can hear you. I can,
yeah.
Like,
hi.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Damn.
That's incredible. When I was doing, I did, like, an online children's yoga training through Yoga Ed, and there was a teacher in there, and she was a special ed teacher, and she was taking this yoga class because it had so many beautiful positive effects with her students, and a lot of, like, the nonverbal students she had really did, they adapted really well to the yoga and in presenting that into the classroom. So she's trying to, like, create a curriculum that includes yoga with her special ed students.
That's cool.
And I thought that was really beautiful. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, and I know that, like, there are, you know, groups right now in Japan that are trying to work against the stigma. Mm-hmm. It's just tough. Like, it's not a city that's built for people with wheelchairs and stuff like that. And they had a Paralympics there in 2020, and there were tons of people that were like, here? Like, oh, suddenly you're building ramps now.
The,
like,
most,
you know,
inaccessible, yeah, city of all time.
Yeah, they're like,
cool.
Oh, like, there was some work done to the city to make it compliant, but, like, the fact that they had to do all, like, there's tons of people living in the city all the time anyways, and then
right.
The fact that it took this outside eye looking at them to change things, yeah, it's just important, I think. Yeah.
It is important.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a story that I don't know if I've shared with you guys yet. I was doing Tape Face and playing Phyllis. And afterwards, I get to talk to people because I go out and I, like, greet people. And there was a father that came up to me and he was like, I know Tapeface isn't coming out, but I just hope that you can give him this message. My child is nonverbal and absolutely loves Tapeface. And I teach her and other students how to communicate with nonverbal things based on Tapeface.
Aww.
And it was just so amazing.
That's cool.
Because like the whole show, Tapeface is nonverbal. Yeah. And it's like how he communicates with everybody without using a single word. And it's very inspiring. And I met his daughter and she was so happy to be there. Took a picture with her. It was her birthday.
Aww.
And it was just so incredible. And she had tape on, like she had tape on her face.
Yeah.
And she liked all the things and super big fan. And I let Tapeface know and they're just so happy and just full of love. And just amazing.
That's cool.
That's really cool.
So yeah, that was what I brought to season three.
Thanks, Brenna.
Starting it
off. Good kickoff to season three.
There we go.
It was a good kickoff of a terrible story.
Terrible story.
It is super unfortunate that there's only 7 names on the memorial. For many years, there were none.
Oh, man.
And so it's just important just to, I know that Nicole, you always make a point to like speak the victims' names and stuff like that. And so it was like, Googling the victims, there's like, you just don't see anything. I had to go out of my way to find Miho's story. So it's like, it's just, there's a lot of shame involved and it shouldn't be shameful. Mm-hmm. And just, yeah, it's important. There's tons of stories out there with victims we'll just never know about their names. So just mm-hmm. important to be aware, to bear. Beans, bears, beers.
But no, I'm really thankful that you brought this story and brought this issue to light. You know, because it's something that people don't like talking about. And we should talk about it.
It is important.
It's very important to talk about. And I thought that how you did it was beautiful. And thank you for sharing the names you did find and going out of your way to find some of those names because it wasn't present when you first looked at things.
Cool beans.
Oh, man. Speaking of beans, thank you, beans, for joining us on our first episode of season 3. It's very exciting. I know a lot of you have reached out to us because you've been very excited for season 3. And here we are. Here we are. Please reach out to us. Let us know how you're doing, what you're thinking. If you got some stories you want to share, please, please share them with us. And we look forward to hearing from you and sharing more stories with you in next week here on
Morning Murders.
We're back.
Back.
Back, back.
Back and backer than ever.
Back, we did that last time.
Thank you for listening to Morning Murders.
Keep checking our page for new episodes and special guests.
Want to learn more? Swing by our Instagram to check out more information from our episodes. At Morning Murders, that's MourningMurders.
Also, you can always check out some mental health links and our episodes resources in our show notes.
If you enjoyed listening to our highly caffeinated conversation, please leave us a 5-star rating and tell your friends.
If you have any stories you'd like to hear discussed around the Breakfast Nook, email us at morningmurders@gmail.com.
Thank you for listening!
He's like, okay, I'll be a real cute boy. He's like, I'm just gonna be the cutest boy.
Goodbye.
Goodbye,
Nicole.
What season is it?
3.
Oh.
Tree.
Season freedom.
Free.
It's
2023. We don't do things for free. Unless it's season 3.
Season 3.
Oh,
brilliant. Brilliant. All right. Are you ready?
Get your mouth farts out now.
Or don't. You know what? You can use it.
I knew she had it.
Here at Morning Murders, we embrace.
Class.
Embrace.
We're just three classy motherfuckers who like to speak about true crime.
True crime and mouth farts.
Mouth farts.
True crime and mouth farts.
That's the sticker.
All right, we already did that.
Oh, all right, we're going in a loop.
Got a loop. We're stuck. Oh, God.
Throwback.
Back.
Classic.
Classic.
Classic.